the state of our state is indeed strong and very promising.
Governor Sam Brownback gave his eighth and final State of the State address this week. I'm Kay McIntyre, and today on KPR Presents, we'll walk through his speech section by section. What did the governor say? What didn't he say in his remarks to lawmakers? I'm joined by KPR State House Bureau Chief Stephen Caranda and Professor Bob Beatty of Washburn University. We'll hear from them throughout the hour today, starting less than 1 minute into the governor's remarks. Here is Governor Sam Brownback and his 2018 State of the State address.
Madam President, before I go into the rest of this, legislative leading is hard. Let's give these two leaders a big round of applause for what they do. Good job. Members of the Kansas Supreme Court, and being on the court's not easy either. Let's give them a round of applause.
Bob Beatty, this was maybe a bit of a surprise to have Governor Brownback tip his hat to the Kansas Supreme Court here.
Well, this is Governor Brownback's farewell speech, and he's being really nice through the entire speech. And we have to put this into context. And I've been to eight of Brownback's speeches, and a large number of speeches, he's attacking people. And it's traditional to go after the Supreme Court justices. In fact, where I usually sit is right behind the justices. And it's always a classic awkward moment. They're sitting just 8 feet away from him. And every state of the state, he'd say, this is basically outrageous. We need to stop letting these justices do this. And they'd sit there stone-faced. It's tradition, but in his farewell speech, he's like, oh, I really don't mean it this time. I'm leaving. It's probably not going to happen. I have to restate it. The other thing about, we're talking about tradition in the state of the state, is Governor Brownback traditionally would attack essentially the policies of Barack Obama. And most famously, I think it was a couple years ago, but I know one speech he gave where I counted 17 or 18 attacks. And everything was Obama's fault. Everything from the prairie chicken to bad health care. This speech, Washington, D.C., is not even mentioned once, right? And now, whether you're a Trump supporter or not, you got to admit there's a couple things that, you probably could mention about Washington, D.C. That's the influence of party. You know, when a Republican is the president, everything's fine in D.C. But that was actually striking for me to hear no mention of Washington, D.C. In this speech. Whereas in the past, that's sometimes all we heard.
Bob Beatty teaches political science at Washburn University. We'll hear from him and from KPR's Stephen Caranda throughout this hour as we analyze Governor Brownback's final State of the State address, given Tuesday, January 9th. And now we return to the governor's remarks.
Legislators, cabinet members, friends all. Now let me start with the elephant in the room. There's a question that's been often asked this past year, and it's a legitimate one. The question is simply, will he be back? And I'm pleased to say tonight, yes, Bill Snyder will be back. You probably saw that one coming. He, of course, is here with us tonight. And in my opinion, and the opinion of many others, he is the greatest coach in college football history. Fabulous coach, a fabulous individual. And he's back. Coach. This is a sidebar, but I was at the K-State-Iowa State game. K-State pulls it out at the end. I go into the locker room afterwards, which I'm delighted to be there. And what's the coach talk about? He talks about, okay, young man, remember what it took to win this game. And later on in life, you're going to need that same determination to be able to win in life and to be able to do the things that you need to do. And I'm going, God bless you. That's exactly the message to say. And that's why he's chairman of the Kansas Mentoring Council, because he so believes in mentoring and the need to mentor. And we honor that mentoring work along with the coaching work that you've done over many years and how much you've made us proud. Thank you for doing that.
We're listening to Governor Sam Brownback's 8th State of the State Address. I'm Kay McIntyre. We're going to jump in here and talk about what we've heard with Bob Beatty, Professor of Political Science at Washburn University. What do you hear so far?
Well, this is also my 8th Sam Brownback State of the State. And so it's interesting to listen to his farewell speech. And traditionally, Governor Brownback reads from the teleprompter and sticks to the script. And for the first time in 8 years, he went off script. And, you know, it was pretty good. He told a story, and that's just not his usual style, but I think it reflects that this is his final speech. He's not running for re-election. And, of course, he told the joke about will he be back. And to be honest, having Bill Snyder in the gallery and Governor Brownback telling a little story about it, that was one of the highlights of the entire speech, which is right off the bat. Later during the speech, there's going to be some moments where there's not a lot of applause, or especially from his own party. But he really started off the speech very well, and it did make me think he probably should have done more of that in his speeches or the State of the States. He can be very personable one-on-one, but he was quite engaging telling that story.
Joking aside about the elephant in the room, how awkward is this for the governor giving his 8th State of the State address, which by all accounts he had no intention of being here to give this?
No, Governor Brownback, not only did Governor Brownback not plan on giving this speech, but his Lieutenant Governor Jeff Collier really planned on giving this speech. Obviously, Jeff Collier's running for governor, and Collier would have had that one moment where he would have gotten to walk down the aisle with the announcement, please stand, and the applause, and then standing up there as the governor. So Collier was denied that. There were some people that actually, including the Topeka Capital Journal, said that Brownback owed it to Collier for Brownback to resign and give him that moment. Obviously, he didn't. Brownback has learned, it looks like, his lesson, which is don't count on the U.S. Senate to do anything. It's surprising because Governor Brownback was a senator. Governor Brownback put holds on people. Governor Brownback may have held up people's confirmations. So as a political scientist, I was rather surprised that there wasn't more caution on this whole incident, this assumption that he would be sort of streamlined through the confirmation process. But he wasn't. And so it was basically a surprise to have him giving this State of the State. And he joked about it right off the beginning. But still we still don't know if he will finish out his term or if he'll be gone in a couple weeks. And I think that also really affected the State of the State, because I believe Governor Brownback didn't want to go into some real policy detail, because I think he wants Collier to get credit for some of these things. That's just my sort of guess. And so if he was going to go into these policy details in the speech, they'd be associated with him. But if he doesn't talk about them and they happen later, then Collier can take credit for it. So there's a lot of politics going on here as well.
That's Bob Beatty, Professor of Political Science at Washburn University. I'm Kay McIntyre. Today on KPR Presents, we're walking through the Kansas State of the State Address, section by section. And now we return to the governor's speech.
So 2017 was a very exciting year for our beloved Kansas. We hit another record for most Kansans ever employed, 1.4 million, and the lowest unemployment rate we've seen since 2000. We opened the longest hiking and biking trail in the state. The Flint Hills Nature Trail from Harrington to Osawatomie, 117 miles of beautiful Kansas. Go try it. In 2016, Kansas was the only state in the nation to reduce its rate of adult obesity. Now, the rate's still way too high, but the trend's moving in the right direction. Our state's childhood poverty rate has shrunk to the lowest level we've seen since before the Great Recession. And that's a worth a round of applause.
Let's jump in here and talk about some of those things that Governor Brownback is highlighting as accomplishments of his tenure in office so far. Bob Beatty?
Well, there's one thing that he mentioned that a lot of people may not realize, and it fits into what I've viewed over the last 7+ years as what Governor Brownback is most comfortable in office doing as a governor. First of all, there's a number of things he doesn't seem overly comfortable with. He often said he didn't like to veto things. And the only things he usually ended up vetoing were Medicaid expansion and his tax cuts. But numerous cases, he said, I don't issue veto threats. And in terms of a lot of specific legislation, he would tell the legislature, you come up with a bill, I'll sign it. Or you get to work on it, and I'll sign it. So in terms of legislative policy, a lot of people complained he wasn't in the mix, or he wasn't, they would argue, leading. But what he was very comfortable with doing was, I called it as a life coach, especially early on in his first 4 years. He got a little bogged down the last few years with all the tax problems. But I say life coach because he grew a garden early in on his governorship, and that was a lot of publicity. And he mentions obesity, and he's been talking about this for years. He's been challenging state employees with monetary incentives to lose weight, and it's in his mode of almost being like a minister. And this speech falls into that very much. This state of the state, where he's imploring people to, be kind and almost like a pastor giving a sermon. And on Thanksgiving he'll issue proclamations. Let's forgive each other. So, I think he's actually quite proud of the obesity piece because he's been talking about it for 8 years. But these sort of things have been lost because there's been so much controversy over the last 8 years with actual policy, but he always seemed most comfortable talking about ways to make people's lives better in terms of life advice.
Bob Beatty is professor of political science at Washburn University. Today on KPR Presents, we're analyzing Governor Sam Brownback's final State of the State address. I'm Kay McIntyre. You're listening to KPR Presents on Kansas Public Radio.
And I love this one. As a grandfather of three young children, our infant mortality rate sits at the lowest point in history. Infant mortality. We opened a new state-of-the-art medical education building at KU Med that will give us the opportunity to educate an additional 50 doctors each year. We opened the biggest milk drying facility in the United States in Garden City, Kansas, providing us with a great opportunity to export our growing dairy production. The American Royal is moving to Kansas. This past year also saw the completion of the National Soccer Training Center in Kansas City. For you hunters, our quail population is back with the highest levels in 20 years, and our wind energy industry continues to grow dramatically, with nearly 30% of our electricity now coming from the wind. And there are days, and those days, it's up over 50%. Now, I've been blessed with the opportunity to travel this great state border to border from various positions since 1974, when I was elected state president of the Future Farmers of America. And me and my F-100 three-on-the-tree pickup truck started traveling the back roads of Kansas. I've been traveling it pretty much ever since. Our state's a marvelous place. It's full of beauty and wonder. Our sky is our mountain. and our sunsets, they bear the signature of God. To those who can see it, Kansas is a truly amazing place. Now, no one ever goes alone on a successful long journey, and certainly I have not. My wife Mary and I have traveled this course together, and would you join me in recognizing our incredible First Lady for her contributions to this state? Mary? She doesn't like the limelight, so that's the worst part of the speech for her, is that. Love you, hon. Family has been there, too. My parents, Bob and Nancy, are stooped and gray, but still chugging along. Our children have added spice and joy, and now three grandchildren, and that is clearly the best. And our son, Mark, just became a Marine in December, answering the call to duty, and if Ray Merrick were here now, I can hear him in the background saying, "Hoorah!" Joining us in the balcony this evening are Major General Joseph Martin and Command Sergeant Major Joseph Cornelison from the 1st Infantry Division at Fort Riley, the Big Red One. Please join me in recognizing them. Gentlemen. I love the military and all they've meant and done for our state and this nation and this world. If you're a veteran or current active duty guard or reservist also, would you please stand and be recognized? That's more veterans and people that serve than you would find in most legislative bodies. I'm glad you're here. Kansas first responders were quick to answer the call to help our brothers and sisters in Texas in the aftermath of Hurricane Harvey. Over 50 personnel from Kansas went to join the recovery effort, and two of those selfless Kansans are with us today, paramedic Landon Woodward and firefighter Chris Stansberry. Would you two gentlemen please rise and let's recognize their efforts. Thank you. That was a doozy. Topeka Police Officer Aaron Bulmer is also with us this evening. Officer Bulmer saved a 4-year-old child with autism from drowning in a pond last year. When asked about his heroic act, he simply humbly responded, "I believe that God put me into that situation. He allowed me to be at the right place at the right time." Officer, please stand and let us thank you for what you've done. Thank you. And now I'd ask if any other current or former first responders from law enforcement, firefighters, or paramedics, would you also please stand and be recognized? We had some difficult times, too. Courtney Holloway, Mike Detmer, and Robert Adcock are here from the Kansas Department of Revenue. In September, Courtney was shot while doing his job in Wichita. He didn't panic, but he did pray. Rather than run, Robert and Mike quickly jumped into action to aid their injured coworker. They applied a tourniquet, kept Courtney alert and alive, really, until emergency services arrived. Please join me in recognizing Courtney Holloway, Robert, and Mike for their inspiring and heroic actions that day. Gentlemen. Thank you, gentlemen. We're proud of you. Now, I've had many good friends for the journey, as you have. friends closer than a brother, riding with me at a full gallop across the prairie. And finally, I've been blessed with a staff so loyal that they have gladly taken the slings and arrows cast my way. I'll be forever grateful for the contributions and dedications that they have brought to this office. We all have great staff, and so let's thank them for making this place work. Staff, thank you.
Stephen Caranda, KPR State House Bureau Chief. To me, that was sort of the one acknowledgement that Governor Brownback made that he's leaving the governorship or will be leaving the governorship with a fairly low popularity level.
That is true. And the other way that I also heard that, and maybe that's my perspective as a reporter, was somewhat of a combative statement about the media. Because while Brownback, compared to some politicians, has a very good relationship with the media, he's more available than some other elected officials to the media. He has kind of had this like friendly, combative relationship with reporters. So I took it as maybe also meaning that about reporters. And he's kind of argued that maybe he hasn't, you know, that his tax policies didn't get a fair shake. Those are things we've heard from him in the past, or have been criticized maybe for unfair reasons. So I think those are probably all different things that played a part in that saying that, you know, the slings and arrows sent his way had impacted his staff.
Take the applause now. Later in the session, it'll be yelling. So with all that I've mentioned, I am the most blessed man that I know. Traveling this state so many years, you do meet lots of wonderful people with great stories. Two really stand out. Rose Harris was 101 when I met her in Pittsburgh, Kansas. She was raised in a very poor family. She thrived, though, through it all with really an uncommon faith and beauty. I asked her when I met her the biggest lesson she had learned in life. And without hesitation, she said it was when she was a little girl and her dad went off to work in the mines. She was left in charge of the house and younger children. They were all hungry, but they had no food. So Rose went to the outhouse and prayed, "God, we need food." She came back into the house, and a neighbor lady was at the door. She asked if Rose would churn her milk into butter. Rose said she would, and she did. The neighbor gave her some of the butter and a few coins for her work. With the money, Rose went to the store and bought a few pieces of meat, and they had food. Rose said that from then on, she always knew that God would provide for them, from then on, all her life. I also had the pleasure of meeting a 107-year-old World War I veteran in Marysville, Kansas. This was when I was in the Senate, 107. Leo Lang was one of the very few World War I veterans still surviving at that time. Mentally sharp, but lying in a deteriorated body, I asked him what was the biggest change he had seen in this nation over all his years. Again, without hesitation, he said, "When I was young, we didn't have anything, but we were a lot happier." Certainly, our material wealth had progressed in his lifetime, but has our happiness kept pace? It's a good question for us as policymakers to ponder. So in this, my last State of the State message, I'll speak from the heart about dreams. I have heard from others, and I've had myself for our wonderful state. Now, as a dad, I know that every parent's greatest dream is for their children to grow, learn, and succeed. So let me address the biggest issue of the session, which is school finance. We have received the decree of the Kansas Supreme Court and are putting forth a proposal to comply, as we have done with the prior decisions. My budget recommendations includes an additional $600 million in funding over the next 5 years. This multi-year approach will provide the time necessary for school districts to plan and spend this additional money more effectively. My proposal does not include a tax increase.
Let's jump in here at the one real policy part of the Governor's State of the State address. I'm Kay McIntyre. Today on KPR Presents, we're walking through the Governor's address to lawmakers, kicking off their 2018 session. Stephen Caranda is KPR's State House Bureau Chief. Stephen, did this recommendation surprise you?
It did, because in the past, he's been kind of critical of the court for these education rulings. He said in the past, you know, it's the power of lawmakers to decide how much we spend on schools, not judges. So I was surprised when he said that, because that is effectively just complying with the court. You know, $600 million is the kind of estimate you would get from an education advocate who says we should pump a bunch of extra money in the schools to comply with the court. That's the kind of number you hear. So when he's saying that, he is effectively saying, okay, let's just do what we think would satisfy the court. And part of that, to me, watching from the outside, was maybe because this is his last speech. He's not, you know, saying, let's fight the court, let's go out, I'm going to go out, you know, with this big battle with the courts. He's saying, okay, let's propose amending the Constitution, which he also did, so that we don't have these types of lawsuits in the future. But it's, as he put it, you know, I think it's not an option. You know, we have to do this. The schools have to stay open. So let's comply with the court, figure out what we can do to prevent this in the future.
He also says, let's do it without increasing taxes. How do we do that?
Well, if you're one of the lawmakers studying the plan that he's unveiled now, they would argue you don't do it. Because his proposal is $200 million the first year, although a big chunk of that is money lawmakers had already approved last year. But he's saying bump up the first year here to $200 million, then another $100 million each of the coming 4 years. But his budget proposal, which is, you know, just for the coming year, only covers that $200 million. The rest down the road, the administration says, well, we're hoping that growth in tax collections, which we've been seeing, will pay for the rest of that. So lawmakers are looking at it saying he's asking for $600 million. He's putting out there we should comply. We should, you know, put in the $600 million over 5 years. But he's not really offering a concrete way to pay for it.
Okay.
Now, let me make one thing very clear. The people of Kansas expect results. The Kansas State Board of Education will be responsible for making sure they get them. Now, I suggest they consider the following goals to do so. First, we should reach a 95% statewide graduation rate. Second, a minimum of 75% of our students should be continuing their education after graduation, whether that be through attending college, earning a post-secondary certification, or joining the military. Third, we should accelerate the movement of Kansas schools to the Kansans Can model for school redesign launched by the Kansas Department of Education. To help us stay on course to achieve these goals, I propose 5 strategic objectives for K-12 education. First, Kansas has great teachers. We should have a higher average teacher pay than any of our surrounding states. Second, we should increase the number of school counselors and school psychologists in Kansas schools by 150 positions each year. Third, we should have at least 50 schools participating in the Kansans Can School Redesign Project. Fourth, every Kansas high school should offer at least 15 credit hours of dual credit coursework to every high school student at no additional cost to parents. This is a minimum, and it's clearly something we can do. This can be through a partnership between high schools and the state's institutions of higher learning. And fifth, they should also offer every Kansas high school student, again at no additional cost to parents, the choice of taking either the ACT college entrance exam or the Work Keys assessment. These goals should be achieved within the next 5 years.
Let's jump in here again. We've heard from Stephen Caranda about the $600 million proposal for school finance. But in this section, Governor Brownback really gets into some specifics of what he'd like to see done in the area of K through 12 education. One of the things he touches on is dual credit coursework. Bob Beatty from Washburn University, for people who aren't necessarily well versed in K through 12 and higher education, what is that dual credit coursework?
Yeah, this is a concept that's been talked about for a number of years. I heard it when I was in Iowa during the presidential election from Marco Rubio and others. And Governor Brownback has been talking about it for several years. And basically the idea is to get to a point where college is affordable. And rather than the state subsidizing, you know, more of the tuition costs at KU or K-State or wherever, it's to get the students, the state to pay for dual credit where they take a class in high school and it counts for college credit. From his proposal, it sounds like then the state would pay for that. So instead of paying for a student's class at KU, they're paying for it at Seaman High School, and then they don't have to take it at KU. And this is part of a larger effort by some who want to get students essentially out of college quicker. Because in the end, if the state is offering to pay for a college class, it's the same thing, whether it's in high school or not. So in the end, it's really about getting students out of college quicker. And there's a big debate about that. You know, what's then sort of that reframes the whole idea of what college is supposed to be about. Is it a place to, you know, really learn? Or is it just a place to get that degree and then move on? And we're seeing, these attempts of like this, at least in Kansas, subsidizing online degree programs, 100% online degree programs. So it's really more of a move towards seeing college as a means to getting that immediate job versus some who argue that another aspect of college is preparing people for a lifelong approach to work rather than, hey, get that job, train you to get a job. So now one of the more successful aspects of Governor Brownback's policies in the last few years has been to try to help students go right to the technology schools. And that is where that can be really effective, but it's much more debatable about whether it's in the best interest of a student to take a college English class in high school rather than college. Either way, the state's going to pay for it. You might argue it's better for them to take it in college because when you're 21, you may figure out Ulysses a lot in a lot more meaningful way than when you're 17.
Okay. Let's go back to Governor Brownback's State of the State address on Kansas Public Radio.
$600 million is a very significant investment. And Kansans expect to see students in every school in our state thrive and achieve, particularly our students who the court cited as being inadequately served under our current funding. We must not repeat the mistakes of others who have gone down the primrose path of thinking that educational results can be forced by massive infusions of taxpayer money alone. Money by itself will not solve the problem. For the best illustration of this, one need look no further than the Kansas City, Missouri School District, sometimes called America's most costly educational failure. Federal courts supercharged the district with nearly $2 billion in little more than a decade. And when it was all spent, there was little to show in academic improvement. Test scores were stagnant, achievement gaps remained, and the dropout rate actually went up. We must learn from this history. Additionally, we must stop the never-ending cycle of litigation on school finance. I urge the legislature to put a constitutional amendment on the ballot this year addressing our school finance system. The people need to be heard on this central issue of state government.
We're going to jump back in here as Governor Brownback urges lawmakers to take up a constitutional amendment on the role of the courts versus the legislature in determining school finance. Stephen Caranda, KPR State House Bureau Chief, How likely is it that the Kansas House and Senate will do that?
It's very unlikely, I would say, because even when the legislature was more conservative a few years ago, they did not have the votes for a constitutional amendment to basically say the courts can't do this or the courts can't close schools. The votes weren't there then, and now the legislature has become more moderate with more moderate Republicans and more Democrats. So unless they had some kind of constitutional amendment proposal that was agreed to by people across the political spectrum, I don't see how it will happen. And the governor didn't, you know, spend a ton of time talking about it in the speech either. That wasn't a huge policy point. He basically had a few sentences saying, we should do this. He didn't give any specifics on what he'd like to see, but he said we should do this so we don't have these types of fights in the future anymore. It's something that he's wanted to see, that some other lawmakers have wanted to see. But like I said, unless they can figure something out that would get people from across the political spectrum, I don't see the votes are there because it takes a two-thirds majority and then a vote of the public.
If you're just joining us today on KPR Presents, we're walking through the 2018 State of the State Address, section by section. I'm Kay McIntyre. Joining me on today's program are Stephen Caranda, KPR State House Bureau Chief, and Bob Beatty, Professor of Political Science at Washburn University in Topeka. You're listening to KPR Presents on Kansas Public Radio. We'll return to the governor's speech right after this.
Support for KPR comes from KCPT, Kansas City PBS, with the latest news, events, and programming on Twitter, Facebook, and kcpt.org.
Now, Kansas is a dreamer's paradise. Our broad horizons tempt the mind to expansion. Our friendly people invite collaboration to accomplish a dream. A spoken word creates. An encouraging word produces encouragement. A negative word, negativity. A dream spoken sets up the architecture for the creative efforts of free men and women to build upon. That is, if that dream captures their hopes for the future, even if they can't quite see it yet. Now, many of us remember the speech Ronald Reagan gave in front of the Brandenburg Gate, where he stated the collective dream of those in the West when he said, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. There were no bulldozers there ready to tear down the Berlin Wall, but its foundation crumbled that day. The spoken word created. So let me speak of dreams, dreams for our beloved state of Kansas. My dream for Kansas is to be the best place in America to raise a family and grow a business. I dream of a Kansas whose population is growing faster than the national average because we have created such a dynamic environment, an environment that has many and diverse job opportunities, an environment with a great and affordable quality of life that calls people to Kansas. This will take time, bold effort, and creativity, but it is achievable. I dream of a Kansas where poverty is on the run, where jobs are plentiful, challenging, and enjoyable, where wages and benefits are climbing. I dream that education in the state is tailored to each student's needs and desires so that that student has the maximum chance to succeed. That we have more educational options for each K-12 student, like we do now for higher education students. I dream schools will be places of accomplishment where students and parents choose to go to learn, to achieve, and to be challenged. They will be character-forming places that back up the family and produce a stronger person, where patriotism flourishes, civic duty is instilled, and all students achieve. Kansans dream of having better cancer care. Everybody in this room has either been affected personally by cancer or knows someone who has been. One of our own, Representative Rich Prell, has just come through cancer surgery. And we wish him Godspeed in his recovery. Rich? And you'll never find a nicer guy than Rich Prell. Rich, good to have you here. I dream of leading the country in developing new treatments to heal old maladies using our own adult stem cells, hips and knees for some, but also your heart and mind. I dream of ending the shortage of rural physicians and dentists that has chronically plagued this state by Kansas producing our own dentists and more doctors. Lieutenant Governor Jeff Collier is a man who's not only shaped health care policy in this state, but he has dedicated his life to service of others as a doctor. Now, whether it's helping a disabled child in Kansas with a cleft palate, or a malnourished refugee in places like Sudan, Rwanda, or Syria, my friend Jeff has served others in ways that many of us only dream of. Jeff, please stand. Let us recognize your service to your fellow man. Jeff, Dr. Collier.
Let's jump back in here. I'm with Stephen Caranda, KPR State House Bureau Chief. At this point, Stephen, the governor recognizes the man who's about to take over his seat, or so we think, Lieutenant Governor Jeff Collier.
And yes, he said some nice things about the lieutenant governor, but I'm a little surprised he didn't say more, because as you mentioned, the lieutenant governor will very soon be the governor. He's been with Brownback his whole term, and it seems to me that Brownback would be wanting to boost his effort to stay in the job because Collier's already said he's running for governor. So I actually was expecting a Brownback to lay a little more praise on Collier, or maybe kind of, you know, start laying the path for him to really be the person the lawmakers are dealing with. But he didn't do that. He said a lot of nice things about the lieutenant governor, but he didn't really, you know, dwell on it that much. And the more I think about it, you know, the more that does kind of in some ways make sense, because in the past, Brownback has often stayed out of Republican primaries. And so this is an example where Lieutenant Governor Jeff Collier is in this crowded Republican primary. And so the governor isn't necessarily endorsing him. He said some positive things about him. And on the flip side, you might say, would you want Governor Brownback's endorsement, because his approval ratings aren't that high. So I thought the lieutenant governor would play a little more role in the speech initially. That was kind of my initial feeling when I heard that. But the more I thought about it, the more it kind of made sense that it wasn't a big focus on the lieutenant governor. I mean, the focus really was on the governor, because this is, I think, as he put it, his swan song.
Okay, let's hear some more.
I dream of a future Kansas exporting wind electricity across America. A Kansas known as the renewable state. It could well be that in the future, those who have the wind resources will flourish like those who now have oil. We are growing as an energy state. Dream with me of an Ogallala aquifer that never runs dry because the use is sustainable. Of our reservoirs dredged, renewed, and supplying the water we need in times of severe drought. Of us having a legal, binding allotment of water from the Missouri River, and of an Arkansas River with water in its whole course. These are possible. We can do it. Dream with me of a growing and diversifying air capital of the world, with thousands of new jobs, the latest technology, and a magnet for precision manufacturing. We will expand in commercial and general aviation. We will build airframes and engines and do extensive maintenance work. We will grow in defense and commercial aircraft manufacturing and in drone technology. All the major aircraft manufacturers will have major operations here because Kansas leads the way in aviation. They will say, if it flies, it must be from Wichita. We can be an unmanned aerial vehicle hub where the latest UAV technology is developed, tested, and manufactured. We can be to unmanned aerial systems what we now are to general aviation. I dream that Kansas will continue to be and grow as a major financial services hub. That's now happening in Topeka and Johnson County. We have even more upside in this field. Dream with me of feeding the world meat and bread, but we'll expand our place at the table to include milk that you drink, eggs that you eat, of moving up the value chain so that the High Plains is known as the place where animal agriculture is done because we do it bigger and better than any place else in the world. Agriculture businesses and cattle genetics will headquarter in Kansas City. Around the world of agriculture, Kansas City will be the capital. The dream for the legends in Wyandotte County is for it to be a new Kansas City. If you know our state's history, you know Kansas is where the fight to end slavery began. And now we have another chapter in that saga of man's horrid treatment of each other. We will fight the scourge of human trafficking like no other state and throw that darkness from our borders. Attorney General Schmidt has been a champion in this fight against human trafficking. General, would you please stand and let's recognize yours and the legislative effort that's taken us thus far and move us on forward. Attorney General. Thank you. Thank you. I dream of reconciliation between the races, where our problems aren't ignored but addressed, where people of goodwill view the past and the present with clear-eyed honesty and resolve to make things right. This is an honest discussion our country desperately needs, and Kansas can lead.
Let's jump back in here. Stephen Kranda, KPR State House Bureau Chief. That improvement to race relations maybe got off to a little bit of a bumpy start this week, thanks to a lawmaker from Ulysses, Kansas.
We did have Representative Steve Alford make these comments at a town hall meeting. I'm paraphrasing here, but effectively he said part of the reason drugs were made illegal is because African Americans, quote, because of their genetics and heritage, are more susceptible to abuse drugs. That blew up, but that was all after. I mean, that was made public after the governor made those statements. The governor's statements in the speech didn't come as a surprise to me. The governor has been criticized by people who don't agree with him on policy issues. But when it comes to actual issues of, you know, religious tolerance and peaceful negotiations and things like that, he's often, because of his spiritual base, he's always been big on reconciling and getting over differences and trying to get past differences we may have had. Every year he has, around Thanksgiving, he signs a proclamation saying, look, everyone, I know we have differences, but this is a time of year where we should try to get past our differences with our own family members, with our friends, or, you know, people we've had conflicts in the past, and we should really make an effort to get past those things. So that is kind of a theme that he has put out in the past. So it wasn't a surprise to me to hear it come up in there.
Okay.
And finally, I dream of a culture of life where every life at every stage is celebrated and cherished. Now, you've already done much to create this. With all the legislation protecting and honoring life you have passed, there have been 17,000 fewer abortions in the past 6 years than in the prior 6 years. 17,000 fewer. We must not go back.
Governor Brownback has consistently been strongly pro-life, and in this, his final State of the State address, he once again called on lawmakers to continue to reduce the abortion rate in Kansas.
This is one of the areas where there were major changes under the governor, because before Governor Brownback, for a long time, we had had Democratic or more moderate Republican governors who were not as friendly to abortion restrictions. So there was kind of this pent-up demand for these abortion regulations that when Governor Brownback came into office, people who wanted those changes were able to say, here we have it. If we fight and get these things through the legislature, the governor will sign them. So he really did, oversee a significant change in that area.
Okay.
These are all dreams for Kansas. If they capture any of your own sense for our future, then let us band together, Democrat and Republican, to make them so. It'll be a blessing to the people who are so weary of political jousting and just want to see something done. What say ye? A journey together with a friend is a thing of beauty. Let me end with a story about one of your former colleagues, Jan Pauls, a friend of mine on the journey. Many of you know Jan. She served in this body for over 20 years with distinction and grace, an able legislator with her husband, Ron, always at her side. She never lost sight of her values and what was important to her. She lost her last election when she wouldn't compromise her values, and less than a year later, she lost her life. Jan's funeral was a celebration of a warrior gone home to her eternal rest, loved and beloved. Her life was well lived for the God she served. I'd seen her alive in a hospital bed 3 weeks earlier, and gone were the earthly worries that so easily distract us. She was at peace. Can any of us ask for any more? Less than a month after Jan's passing, her replacement in the legislature, Patsy Terrell, also passed away unexpectedly. May we have a moment of silence for both of them. What a striking reminder that life is fleeting, that we must set our sights to fulfill our purpose without delay, that every day we live in these bodies is important. It is a reminder to live with purpose and to walk in love and service with our brothers and sisters. Here in Kansas, that is our way of life. So because of our good people, this good land called Kansas, and the blessings of Almighty God, I can report to you that the state of our state is indeed strong and very promising. God bless you all.
Governor Brownback's speech was three components. It was thanking everybody who, you know, for the help they've given him through the years. It was the school finance and, hey, hundreds of millions of dollars, let's go, which sort of shocked the Republicans. And I should add at this point that in 8 years, I don't think I've seen so many smiles on Democrats' face to hear that money going to education. But the third part was the I have a dream part. I talked to Governor Brownback after the speech and asked him about this. Because it was quite different, really, than many of his other speeches. He said he's been wanting to give this speech for years and sort of thinking about what Kansas can be doing. Now, this is really important. In his most famous speeches, or especially early on for Governor Brownback, he would say that what he wanted for Kansas was to be a beacon for the rest of the country, to show the rest of the country that conservative ideology on taxes and on social policy and other things can work. It was a reaction to the election of Barack Obama, and especially in healthcare and Obamacare, to resist Obamacare and also cut taxes. And he said in several of his State of the State speeches, we'll show everybody else. They'll look to Kansas rather than looking to the Democrats and Obama. We're not hearing this here. These are relatively small, you might even say a little boring, but more practical dreams for this state. And they're doable. And in the budget that he later presented after the speech, you know, it's some millions of dollars for these things. Because it's not going to be billions like the tax cut would take. It's not rejecting billions like rejecting Medicaid expansion. It's a few million dollars to try to, you know, get more innovation into Wichita and revive the airplane industry. It's water. And he talked to me after the speech and said he's really excited about water. Well, who's excited about water? You know, not very many people. Your average Kansan isn't, but people out, it's very important to the state, and he spent a lot of time on it. But that's not something you sell to the rest of the nation. What do they care? about if Kansas water supply is vibrant. They don't care, but it is important to Kansas. Wind electricity and renewable energy is really important to the state of Kansas. So I had one legislator say after the speech, they liked a lot of these things that he talked about. And they said, I wish this would have been his speech in his first year. And some of these dreams might have been sort of came true.
That's Bob Beatty, professor of political science at Washburn University. We'll finish up this hour with some last thoughts about the 2018 State of the State Address and the next day's proposed budget from KPR State House Bureau Chief Stephen Caranda.
Well, so the way it works is, as you mentioned, we just kind of get some broad strokes in the State of the State Address. Then the next day, Sean Sullivan, Governor Brownback's budget director, goes before lawmakers and gives them a detailed outline of what the governor is proposing. So what he ultimately proposed is this plan to boost education funding, but as I said before, not with a really specific way to pay for it. The first chunk of it would be paid for partially by using some of the things we've done in recent years, by shifting highway money, not paying back delayed CAPERS payments, those kind of things. And then down the road, not detailed plans on how it would be paid for in the future. So the plan got, I'm not exaggerating to say, a hugely negative response from lawmakers, including moderate Republicans who said, Melissa Rooker is a moderate Republican I talked to, who said, we had proposed this kind of boost in funding last year, and had we done it, maybe the court would have agreed with it and we wouldn't be here now in the situation we're in. Democrats say, you know, he's just putting this out there without a way to pay for it. Some conservatives have that same kind of sentiment. He's putting this out here without a way to pay for it. The Senate President Susan Wagle, even though she didn't support the tax increase last year, she had supported some kind of tax bill, and she was very mad that the governor fought them on tax policy last year, and then now he's coming back with a bunch of new spending that wouldn't even be close to possible without that tax bill. So it got such a negative response that at the end of the day, the governor's office issued a new statement with the governor basically saying, look, I realize people on all sides of the aisle are criticizing this, but it's not an option to respond to the court. He basically reinforced what he said in the speech. We have to respond, and this is a way to respond that almost surely the court would agree to. Some people think the court might not accept a multi-year plan, but there are a lot of people who think if you say, here we have some solid funding plans for the next few years, maybe the court would accept it.
Stephen, given the kind of reflective tone of the State of the State Address, do you think the governor's office was surprised by the negative reception it got?
The fact that he issued a new statement later in the day makes me think they were a little surprised, but the governor's budgets, not just this governor, all governors, they're just a starting point for the legislature. So they're often not giving the legislature what will ultimately become law. They're kind of this blueprint that lawmakers then change a lot. The difference here was the main core issue that he has laid out for this session, the $600 million, was just getting this brutal response, to the point where he had to say, look, we're going to work with you on something else if you want to do it, but we have to respond to the court. I'm saying we should do it with this much. Now let's figure out how to do it.
Stephen Caranda is KPR's State House Bureau Chief. A special thanks to Stephen and to Professor Bob Beatty of Washburn University for their analysis of Governor Brownback's eighth and final State of the State Address. I'm Kay McIntyre. KPR Presents is a production of Kansas Public Radio at the University of Kansas.